Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
And thank you, Ted Williams. Now, this is the first day with our new intro. Now, that is kind of interesting to me to hear Ted Williams do the intro, the man with the golden voice, of course, from Columbus, Ohio fame, and now national fame, the voice of Kraft Macaroni and Cheese. So we'll talk about later on this morning how that all came about. But hope you enjoyed the new intro this morning, and we will be using that until we don't want to use that anymore. But as I say, hope you enjoyed it. We're kicking off the show this morning in hour number one with a man who has been on this show before, but he is always one of our favorite guests. I know he's one of your favorite voices. He is a voice that was in Ohio for many, many years, making people laugh and think as they were driving home every day from work. He's always got something interesting to say. We always have a tremendously fun time when he is on the program. And what an interesting time to talk to him during the COVID coronavirus pandemic. He is the creator and voice of the longest running syndicated comedy series in radio history, Earl Pitts. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones once again, Gary Burbank. Gary, how are you?
I'll tell you after the autopsy. We're going to know more then. No, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm still just kind of hunkered down and not going anywhere. My wife even tells me I have COPD, so she's like, "I'll go get stuff," and I'm, I'm the man. I should go out. And then she says, "You should just sit down on the couch and shut up." And I, yes, ma'am.
So taking your wife's orders.
That's me. I don't do a whole lot of arguing.
Because
I've never won one.
Well, that's a good place to start then.
What if you tell, they say a man's always wrong. What if you tell your wife that she's right? That means you're wrong.
You know, that's a thinker. That's something to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should all start that way. You know, Gary, here we are in the middle of this pandemic all across the country. What do you make of this whole thing?
What do I make of this? It's just, it's happened before, this sort of thing, maybe not to this degree. I'm not sure. I was asking someone the other day, when you see the plague back, and the Monty Python, the bit where the guy's got the wagon and he's pulling it along, bring out your dead, one guy is keeps saying, "I'm not dead." "Yes, you are." And I hit him over the head with a shovel. I'm the wrong guy to ask that, really, because it just amazes me. But I'm doing what I'm told to do, and I think they ought to take their time before they start sending people back, together again, because the virus needs to be, almost gone by then. And they say it could come back, so we may have a long row to hoe here.
You know, that's one of the interesting points of this whole thing, is how people have had to change their daily activities. A lot of people are currently not working. A lot of people working from home. You have to keep 6 feet of distance when you're around people. Do you think that we have followed this well? Do you think we've handled this well as a society?
I think so. I mean, I really do. There have been, a few nutcases, but I think really well. It's just kind of funny, though, that last night we get a call from Alexandria, where my daughter family, and they're very creative. But my granddaughter's birthday came up last week, and they had to stay within the realms of what you can do. You know, you can't have a party, you can't have a lot of people together. So she put together a thing where she got called a bunch of her friends, and so they we have a real long driveway. So she told my daughter to take the dog for a walk, and she gets to the end of the driveway, and it's a street kind of it becomes a street itself, but it's rural, and so she gets to the main street, and all these cars are going by with signs going "Happy Birthday, Grace," and and all of that. It just floored her. I mean, they, you know, my daughter's is a college professor, teaches electronic media, and but she just very creative. And then last night they call, and I've got another granddaughter there, Claire, who is about as sarcastic as they come, and so she said, "We're going to have family fun." And Claire calls it, no, it's forced family fun night. And so everybody's got to, I had to go get my guitar, and she got her ukulele, and one of the kids is a piano player, one of them is a singer. So we had a great time. We had a great time FaceTiming or Zoom, you know. And in fact, we were on the phone for an hour together, and it was great. Yeah, I think just finding, I think we've done it. I know of other people too. You know, finding something to do that won't be dangerous.
Gary, you know, before this all started, one of the big conversations everybody was constantly having in the days of internet and texting and social media. Is the family spending enough time together? We're racing to practices. We're racing to after-school activities. There are plays and programs. And, you know, this has kind of stopped all that, and now people kind of have to deal with each other. Do you think we can sustain this once this passes?
Oh, yeah, well, you can sustain it, but things are going to change. They always do. Like forced family fun night. Jeez, I don't want to do this. So, but once we start doing it, it's a lot of fun, and we'll do it, you know, again this week at some point. And I think the computer, I mean, it's all in what you make of it. I mean, Tracy, my daughter, she sees it as something that will help bring us together instead of staying in. If it's the old days, we had, you know, only books, and books are great, but. But still, this was something, you know, Zoom and FaceTime is something that brings the family together. And, you know, because we didn't really have a chance to get up there. We would have done that and rode this thing out up there, you know, even though there's no bedrooms left. But we'd have figured it out.
The quickness with which this came on, the week that this all happened, on Monday, this story was not on the front page of any newspaper. It was not leading any newscast. And by Friday, the public school system was shutting down, at least here in Ohio. Do you
That's
think...
That's because people were dropping like flies.
I mean,
that virus is really, I mean, it's very dangerous. We should know that. And people that go out without a mask, and I don't think the mask is supposed to really help you as much as it is the person that you're, you know, in line behind somewhere, or, you know, someone you might touch, and we shaking hands and all of that. I had the hardest time to get a guy not to do that. They pulled up in our driveway, and I hadn't seen him in a while, and down here, and he jumps out, wants a hug. I went, no, and he chased me around. You're not hugging me. Fortunately, I was faster than him, even though I'm 900 years old.
Gary, one of the things about this has been communication, and being one of the greatest communicators of all time, how would you host your own show during something as serious as this?
I would be. It was like, I think I would be really hard pressed to, in the beginning, I would be, I think, I don't know, Scott. Thank gosh, I'm retired. I would be serious in the beginning when it's serious the whole time, but I'm sure that things would come up. Earl Pitts would be saying, like, you know, you ought to have enough sense not to eat a bat. And if they start having bat sandwiches with cheese at McDonald's, then you can eat bat. Otherwise, don't. He would come up with some, you know, goofy lines and things like that every now and then. You know, I would have. We're still able to laugh, you know, and still be serious about everything.
When there is something like this going on, where is that line? Do you ever really know?
The line is in your head. I mean, you know, it's what you permit yourself to. It's what, I mean, like when I was on the air, I mean, I got a little risque sometimes. I'll admit that. But it wasn't overly, you know, there's a line. And what you do it's not a physical line, but in your head there's a line. I can say this, I can say that, but like every now and then you put your toe across that line, you pull it back real fast before like the boss says, well, you said, then it's okay. You just don't become overtly crazy.
During your years on the air, there were a lot of tragedies. You were on the air when 9/11 happened. How
right.
did you handle that?
I got serious. There was no time to be anything but serious, and handled it. I think Marty Brenneman thought too. He called me up and said, "I didn't know you could do that." He said, "Yeah." I just said, "You just thought I was totally stupid, is what." And it worked. You have to be serious at times like that and like this. But if it stretches out over, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, or months and months, there's going to be. You're not making fun of someone who has the disease. Of course, you don't do that. But there is some humor to be found in the fact that, you know, you're lonely and you can't leave the house and that kind of thing.
What do you think the biggest problem here is? Because one of the conversations that we've been having since this started is the pandemic worse, or is the panic, like buying all the toilet paper, is that what is worse right now?
Well, you just ask about humor. I mean, that's pretty funny that I haven't run across it. I mean, you know, but you know that people can't buy toilet paper and still can't. I think it shows we need some manufacturing here in the United States of America.
And what? Nobody yet has figured out why people went for toilet paper. What is it about toilet paper that people went for?
Have you ever used any? It's quite a relief.
That's right. Forget the milk. Forget the meat. Go for the toilet paper.
Yeah. I'm going to have toilet paper, and it's going to be. And the thing of it is, you know, there are probably people bootlegging toilet paper all over the place.
Oh, by now I'm
all
sure.
All kind of deals being made.
They would have to be at this point with everything that's went on.
Yeah.
Going to the grocery store has now become an event for people. You have to stand 6 feet away from everybody at the grocery store. Everybody's got a mask on. Everybody's got gloves on. When people look back on this 50 years from now, how do you think they're going to think of it?
It'll be the same way we look back on, like, we look back on the play. It'll be a sad thing to see all the lives that were lost, and a very sad thing to see, you know, how time stood still because no one could do anything. But you have to wait it out. I mean, they're talking about now, you know, sending the kids back to school, and I'm thinking it's not time. And why would you even, you know, put kids over money anyway? You know, I mean, money over the kids anyway.
Do you think there is a real... when this first started, it was much more about the everybody's well-being and everybody's
right,
health.
Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, we've been in this for just about a month now, mm-hmm. and now, oh, we've got to get the economy moving again, we've got to get kids back to school, we've got
to
do
this. And we do have to get the economy moving again, but we have to consider lives being lost because we're getting in too much of a hurry to do so, so we can look good. I'm not saying any special person, but there is one doing it, and you got to go. It's, you know, it's going to happen, but you need to really show some leadership and make sure that it is time.
Do you think there is the possibility, number one and two, because there is possibility of a second wave, and also we don't have a vaccine as of yet, that we could repeat this whole cycle in a couple months if we do reopen?
I don't think it's going to be as bad again, because now we know about the ventilators and how we're short on them, and there it will be no matter what. If let's say your fourth grader goes to school and comes back and has it, and it's scary, and it's a sad time, and it shouldn't have happened like that. But what do we do? I mean, you've got to say, do we want the economy flowing? But there are some people that are going to pay for that with their lives, and it's not worth it. It's not worth it with your life. We can handle the economy. You know, we can eat hot dogs.
I remember after 9/11, one of the affects of 9/11 was, for a long time, we became very patriotic. People wore the flag lapel pins for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of paranoid that there was going to be another attack for 2 or 3 years after that. What do you think will be the affect of this? Will we be a cleaner people? Will we all have Purell from now on?
No, we're going to go back to do just the way we were. You know, we're going to be motivated by things that have always motivated us. I mean, you want to do better money-wise. You want to do better health-wise. It's going to be the same thing. And we're going to forget about how we won't forget the people who died. I don't think. I don't know why you're talking to me about this serious stuff. No one ever takes me seriously enough to talk to me about serious stuff. It's kind of cool.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting time to be on radio during this, because everybody who's come on, entertainer or not, is talking about this, and it's been interesting to hear that. It's fascinating.
It is. It's fascinating is the right word. Fascinating and scary is another good word when you're on. We don't know what we're doing here. We're in unknown territory. And, yes, we've gone through these things before, but the conditions were different, and the way to get out of it was different. I mean, they don't have to develop an immunization shot for 9/11, but they do for this. You know what I'm saying? But that's why I think we'll get through it. There will be some hard times, but we'll get through it because we always have.
Has there ever been anything in your lifetime that affected absolutely everybody in the United States directly?
In my lifetime?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Not like this. Of course, not like this. I mean, I've been around for, you know, the other scares and the other epidemics and things, but this one is by far the most dangerous, I think.
Do you think we got to a place with Facebook and texting and media and being sophisticated where we thought, well, nothing like that can ever happen again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still at this point in my life. I'm away from my grandkids and the ones in Indiana too. I don't get to see them. I want to get in a car and I want to drive up there immediately, but I can't do that. And none of us can, because we can't take the chance on spreading the germ. Not yet. And so yeah.
When it comes to spreading the germ and what is going to go on, do you think that this is going to be a day when we just open everything back up, or do you think each state is going to take their time and see what assess their state. New York certainly would need to do that to open back up.
Well, we know what's motivating the president. He needs to get things back on track so he can be reelected and everything's look good. Not necessarily be good, but look good. Okay, that's, you know, I'm not blaming him for that. I mean, I am, but he's a politician. But I don't think that it's hard to really. I forgot what you asked.
Is it going to be the states that open back up, or the national government that opens back up?
The state, of course. I mean, the governor of the state was elected to be the governor of the state because he has his finger on the pulse of the state and knows more about what's going on. And if he is for the right, the good of the people, then he's going to be the person to say yes or no when they're going to make things right again and open things up or gradually open things up. You know, if you did it today and all the kids rush back to school, everybody rush back to work, then there's going to be a lot of deaths. And this stuff, you get it, and you find out you have it, 3 hours later, you're dead.
That's true, and you just touched on it, and not to become political here, but we just recently learned who the two guys are going to be in November. It's going to be Biden, it's going to be Trump.
Right.
Do you think this event is going to impact that election?
Oh, of course. I think that the way they handle this, and remember, I don't think Trump sometimes thinks about the results. What if he hurries up and does it, and then the death meter spikes, and that's more blood on his hands, and it's going to be a point that is going to be made over and over and over again. So if he was really smart, what he'd do is like, okay, you know, let's just slow down a little bit and go with the governors and don't give them a chance to nail him for stuff like that.
Is this whole event coming down to a political beach ball?
Oh, yeah, everything does. don't you think so? I mean, to me, it just seems that these days, people find a political aspect and angle on everything. I mean, I don't know why, but for instance, at one point, you never heard people talk about socialism as a bad thing, because we are socialistic. We're democratically socialistic in America and have been forever. I mean, I don't want a socialist Nicaragua either. However, I mean, part of that I-75 or whatever interstate you're in, hospitals, all the things that have been helped by the federal government, that could be called socialism. And so why do people go crazy when you say socialism, you know? And why they went crazy was Fox News excited everybody. And when they say, it's what you say it. If you go, socialism is part of life. But if you go, socialism, oh no, it's part of life! You know, and so what do you do? Calm down.
Yeah, and do you think media, because some media sources did miss this, and we know who they are.
Yeah.
Do you think that it will change maybe how they do business a little bit?
I wonder if it will. I mean, that's a good question. It really is. Yeah. My take on this, people would say the media's left. I go, no, they're not. It's not left. It's sensational. The media's become. You know, I've got to be the reporter to find the story to take whoever I'm talking to down, and I've got to be as immediate as I possibly can. I got to scare people to death. I think, yeah, there's a lot too much of that going on now in the media, but I really don't think they're left or right. In my opinion, I think they're more. I mean, some of them are, but they're more about. What can I do to excite this person to stay tuned to my newscast coming up in 15 minutes? That's why we do promos, right? You know, coming up in 15 minutes, Gary Burbank's going to be talking about so-and-so, and he doesn't know the first thing about it. tune in and hear how stupid he sounds.
What is the biggest change you have seen since you left day-to-day radio 13 years ago now, to now? What is the biggest change?
Well, I think when I left radio, angry white guys were that's what we, as you know, disc jockeys, you know, we used to call them. I mean, they're disc jockeys too, but they just found that the way to go for the ratings is to take side, and the side that long ago turned out to be hardcore right wing, and that's what people do. And so then the media took the opposite side. It became a fight, and everyone is saying they're doing it because you know, they want somebody to be elected. They want themselves to be elected to get a raise.
Gary, one of the things, and we've even come up with a term for this now in broadcasting, it's called cancel culture. If you go on the air and say anything about a certain person or a certain issue, now not only do the listeners turn you off, but they want you off. They don't want anybody else to listen to you.
Right. You know, they only, that's exactly right. There's no give and take on. I mean, look at Facebook, for God's sake. I was playing around with it one time. Everybody thought I was serious, and they were, you know, they were doing a lot of name calling and that kind of thing. So I jumped in. Isn't this fun? You know, and all the Trump pansies over here, and all of the and I've forgotten who the other person was at the time. You know, the Hillary, you know, put her in jail. People over here, and when I say there's no one that is being political, there is. But it's not the overall meaning of it. I think we could. It would be so much better if we weren't trying for that big scoop story. I mean, yeah, you've got to ask the questions, and you need to get the right answers. And sometimes the politicians or whoever you're going after is going to stonewall you. And when they start stonewalling you, you go for them. Why not? But now that's called something totally different. That's, you know, when they do it with Trump, they're you know, he doesn't want to be asked, or he doesn't want to give a straight answer. Well, that, you know, a lot of politicians don't want to give a straight answer, but they're classier about how they do it. And there are some politicians that can't handle it. They just get mad and yell.
Being holed up during this time, and as we said before, Earl Pitts is the longest-running comedy syndicated program in radio history. It continues to this day.
And radio history is very upset about that.
Are they? Oh, did they send a letter?
I'm only kidding. That character, to me, you know, I like Earl, and I think it's very funny. You know, all he is a Southern Archie Bunker.
Do you think the audience gets that, though?
So most of them do, I think. People know not when Earl says something ridiculous, not to take him for his word. But there are some people that have said to me, "It's about time somebody says this on the air," and I just run away.
What percentage, because I've always found this fascinating about that character, because there is no disclaimer, there is no line at the end that this is Gary Burbank, this is not a real person. How many people do you think Earl Pitts is a real person?
I think there's a percentage to do, but are they laughing at him, or are they laughing with him? When Archie Bunker, did I tell you the story about the priest who called me?
I don't think so.
A priest in West Virginia, Earl had said something about the Catholic Church, and the priest called me, and he said, and we went on, I put him on the air, we were talking about it, he was a nice fella. And he was telling me that I shouldn't have said so-and-so, so-and-so. And I said, well, I didn't say it. Earl said it. He said, yeah, you said it. You're Earl. I said, no, I'm not. I'm Gary. Earl is God talks like this. And he said, no, but I said, well, let me ask you this. Do you remember All in the Family and Archie Bunker? When Archie Bunker said something racist or mean or just, you know, not good, did you write Terrell O'Connor and tell him he shouldn't say that? He said, well, no. I said, why not? He said, well, he's an actor. And I said, duh. And then I thought, I said, maybe I'm just not as good an actor. And he can let you know that, somehow let you know that I don't really mean this. I'm kidding.
Well, and that begs an interesting question, because Norman Lear would say, who helped create Archie Bunker, and Carol O'Connor would say, who portrayed Archie Bunker, that the rub on Archie was that he was a bigot. The lovable bigot, I think, is even how they referred to him. Earl Pitts, you created, you write for Earl Pitts, you are not Earl Pitts. What's his makeup as a person?
Earl Pitts?
Yeah.
Earl Pitts is like he's just, like I said, a Southern Archie Bunker. He's a working man. He's drives a forklift at the factory. He owns a part of a bar called the Duck Inn, and spends his nights there, you know, twisting beer caps off and philosophizing with his friends Dub Meeker and Junior Meeker and Runt Wilson, and they're always wrong. I mean, they're just always wrong. None of them. Actually, the bartender, his partner in the bar, the Duck Inn, and it used to be, by the way, it used to be called the Dewdrop Inn was the first place. But what happened was they put a fern in the Dewdrop Inn, and when these guys saw a fern, they left and went across the street to the Duck Inn. And then Earl became a part of that. And to answer your question, basically, the Duck Inn is his respite. That's where he goes. And if you go to a bar and you sit around listening to some of the locals talking, you know, he's not that far off from what they're saying. And sometimes I have to be really careful.
Well, it's interesting, because one of the things that happened during the run of All in the Family is the Archie Bunker character did evolve to a lot of degrees.
He did, but you know what? You don't see it anymore. You don't see it on reruns, right? Why not?
Yeah, that's an interesting...
You know why you don't? Because we're afraid we will offend someone. But we're offending someone when we're really, you know, not saying what they think we're saying anyway. Basically, we have to cater to... You have to dumb down. And dumb down. You're not dumbing down for the people that get Earl Pitts. You're dumbing down for the people... I'm sorry, but it's many of the progressives that, you know, say... you can't say that because people will believe you. And, well, I said, do you get it? Well, I got it, yeah, but so you're saying everybody else is stupid. Excuse me. I'm coughing because this is my time of the morning to cough. I have COPD.
It's a scheduled cough.
I've had it for like 20 years, I think.
Well, it is an interesting thing to talk about, because when you have that kind of longevity and you have that kind of voice, are you aware of it as the writer and the performer?
I'm not always the writer. I've got my partner Tim Misak writes, and there have been people that all along have written Earl, too. I've become, in my old age, I've become more of an editor than I have been a writer. But yeah, I wrote when, in the beginning, I wrote the whole thing, and but I got old.
when it comes to this thing we're in now, this pandemic, do you think there will be a lot of material for Earl when this is over?
Oh, I've had Earl, you know, do a lot of talk about this. Mostly, Earl talks about the family being together and driving him crazy. You know, and ways he has to escape, and there's aspects of it that you can talk about without talking about someone dying or something. You know,
has there ever been one that went over the air in these many, many years that you received the most feedback on, good or bad?
I couldn't name one. I wish I could. I've got a little studio, but I'm not anywhere near it, so I couldn't. I've got some copy that was a little iffy that I went ahead and did, and usually it has to do with religion. Earl sees himself as a very religious man. He goes to church at least 3 times a year, and falls asleep every time. You know. But Earl is a person that many of us are like that, and we see ourselves in this guy, and we say to ourselves, like, I'm not like that, but then, yeah, I do that, you know, and I do kind of feel that way, and but Earl's not always wrong, you know, so you got to be on your toes, I guess.
What makes
the books that we wrote of the Earl, there are books available on, I think it's on Amazon, and they got, you know, like 4 stars, and when you read it, I think I take it down a notch when I'm doing the character. I think, you know, the actual just written word is easier to understand what's going on. I think I'm a detriment to Earl, but somehow it works.
What makes a character work? What makes a great character?
I think relatable. Someone you've known like that. Or just you know what makes it work? When you do it and someone laughs, you go, ah, they like that, and then you it's hard to say. It's like, why do we laugh?
Mm.
I couldn't answer that.
Irony.
We laugh at the irony of a situation. We laugh at if somebody falls down the steps. First of all, we make sure they're alive. Then we laugh.
Well, what is that definition of comedy, that if you fall down, it's a tragedy, if somebody else falls down, it's comedy?
Yeah, that's human nature.
Yeah.
But you fake it, though.
You do, and that's kind of how people are wired for whatever reason.
I saw a line the other day about, it wasn't my line, it was one of the other guys, and it was about, you know, falling down, and the woman, and it was a commercial, and the woman's going, I have fallen, and I can't shut up.
You know, what I often wonder in today's world, because everybody's got a YouTube channel, anybody can do anything. Anybody can podcast. Mm-hmm. We can do anything we want. From somebody who was so meticulous, had writers, wrote things himself, created characters, did voices, prepared a show each day that was a variety show, what do you make of this new wave of let's just get on and do something?
Yeah, well, basically they get on, and that, it's interesting sometimes. Some of these guys can think really quick, you know, and do a good job. It's there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's fine.
Do you think the entertainment value is as good now or not as good as it was 20 years ago? We have so much more of it now.
Well, naturally, you know, coming from 20 years ago, I'm going to say it was a lot better there. We didn't go on the air, and Rush Limbaugh, he kind of, I think he was the first. Well, now there were people before him. I can't think of the guy's name. Who was the guy in New York that was just so mean to his guests? But, well, Limbaugh wasn't mean to his guests, but he picked up on the fact that, like, the same fact that Fox News picks up on, that there are all these people out there that are being ignored by the liberal media. Well, they call it the liberal media, and I say, no, it's not. It's they're catering to who their audience, and they're sensational more than they are, you know, party driven.
This liberal media question's an interesting question. When we had Ted Williams in here the other day, I asked him this same question. Did anybody, in all of your years, in all of the stations that you worked for, did anybody ever come to you and say, push this political agenda?
Never. Never, and I have talked to so many, and that's a question I ask people, too. Has anyone ever told you that you've got to... No, it's just natural instinct. When you're on the air, you may be a screaming liberal, but you see, that doesn't work. If I go on the air and I'm a screaming conservative, that's working. Yeah? And so that's what you become. I don't know if you're going to become one in real life, but that's sort of how it happens. That's what I meant by it's not driven by politics and one side of the bird, the left side of the bird or the right side of the bird. It's what's going to get you the most listeners.
But there has been this perception for a long time that even network news, that's liberal news, that's liberal media. But I don't know really where that's derived from. I've never been able to figure that out.
Maybe a lot of us in the media are just natural liberals. I'm not a liberal myself. I'm more of a, I don't even know what I am. I'm a registered Democrat because my parents are from Mississippi. Back in 1940-something, they registered as a Democrat and never changed, and I never changed either because of that. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to vote Democratic, because I have plenty of conservative bones in my body, and I'm thinking in terms of like some of the stuff that's going on today. And I'll have friends that say, "Well, you can't feel that way because you're progressive." No, I'm not. You know, if you determine progressive as a liberal, I'm not necessarily. There are some liberal things that I think need to be done, and I think we ought to help people. Don't put people in cages, and blah 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 blah. But it means nothing. It's just what I feel. But it also determines whether I'm a liberal or a conservative. I think I'm both.
When you were on the air, were there things that you...
Just an addendum here. Plus, I get a lot more material to write if I go both ways.
Well, and that kind of leads to the next question. When you were on air, were there things you wanted to talk about, felt strongly about, that you didn't because you knew this is air and you did not want to offend one side or the other?
Usually I didn't, because if I started getting too serious, somebody that knew a heck of a lot more about what I was talking about would call in and make me look like an idiot. So, so I would have to, you know, resort to a joke. And... Yeah, I mean, there were things that I did get on the air, and usually I was, but no one ever said, "Don't do that." No one ever said, you know, don't do this, don't come across as a conservative here, do this or that. No one ever said that. Heck, Randy Michaels, said he was over all of the Clear Channel stations for a long time, and Randy said that, you know, it's better to go ahead and do it and then ask for permission later. and I was classic at that.
Better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Right.
Yeah, always the best way to go into it.
Yeah.
When you were doing things on the air, did you ever say anything that you regretted? The next day, thought, I shouldn't have said that.
Every day.
Oh, every day. Yeah.
I can't come up with anything specifically right now, but just about every day, I could have said this, and that's one of the hardest things. My wife Carol and I would be driving, you know, somewhere that when I was on Westwood One for a while, that they did a Saturday night show, and it was all, you know, my material and everything, and I. I, you know, if we were traveling somewhere or something, she'd turn it on. I go, no, turn that off. I can't say it. Because you hear it, and you go, you know what I said? What I should have said was, you know, and you're constantly correcting yourself. And some people tell me that's a good thing. That means you're gonna do it better next time. No, it doesn't, because next time you're gonna do the same thing you did before. You're gonna think you could have done it better.
Do you ever miss having the platform every day to do it?
Never. I don't really have that. I don't have the. I mean, there are times when I like to have a platform when I see some injustice that I feel is being done, and I want to say something about it. But I don't think I ever changed anything.
Well, you certainly changed the landscape of radio, because I don't know how many people in the world, certainly in the United States, don't know who Earl Pitts is or who have laughed at him. And the Gary Burbank show, for all the stations it was on for so many years, was very popular.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It was, but it was still, you know, it was, Yeah, well, thank you. I just shut up right there.
Well, Gary, the time always goes by so fast with you when you're on. It's been a deep conversation, and it's interesting because I think it was a thoughtful conversation.
Yeah, usually we're telling outrageous stories.
That's right. We didn't make it there today, so you'll have to come back very soon, and we can tell some funny, outrageous stories from the past. Gary, you're always just a gem to me and a pal, and I thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, my pleasure, okay?
Thank you.
And stay safe.
Yes, yeah, stay well.
Okay.
Bye-bye. The legendary Gary Burbank, you might know him better as the voice of Earl Pitts, the longest-running comedy show in the history of syndicated radio. How about that? We're coming back with much more right after this. Don't go away.
Address, 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number, 740-225-95. Page, crtmechanicals.com.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents, What to Expect When You're Expecting,